Hello and welcome to The Stushy, the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media. My name's David Clegg, I'm the editor of The Courier, and it has been a hell of a week in Scottish politics. There's almost been too many stories to fill the newspapers, websites, and to make a podcast, but we will do our best to do all of the above as we do every week. I am joined by two familiar faces and one debut for the Stushy podcast. Today I have from the Press and Journal their political editor Tom Peterkin. From the Courier I have our political correspondent Derek Healy. And from our schools team, in a first appearance, I have Cheryl Peebles, because the exam result really has been a Stushy, and we will talk about that a lot later on. But Tom, you've just came fresh from seeing the Chancellor. Can you tell us what Mr. Sunak has been saying in his visit to Scotland this morning?
Just as you say, fresh off a Zoom call with the Chancellor, which was an interesting experience in itself. So he is one of the, perhaps you could say, one of the few UK Tory politicians who seems to have a reasonably positive rating in Scotland, because he's the man that's been splashing the cash during the coronavirus. And he's here obviously to talk about the billions that has been spent in Scotland and the jobs that have been protected during the pandemic. So he was making a lot of that, as you'd expect. But there was a fairly clear message came through as well that unfortunately the furlough scheme will have to end in October. It cannot go on indefinitely, he said. And he was sort of making the point that, you know, you can't have people sort of suspended in this way. And if they are going to sadly lose their job, that they're better to get into the labour market and try and find new ways of giving them more new opportunities. So that was one of the messages that came across. I also asked him about, given that Aberdeen has sort of had lockdown restrictions tightened again, if the UK Treasury would be providing any extra cash for Aberdeen. And his answer was that really it was a matter for the Scottish government, that local business support was devolved. So, yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing any particular help from the Treasury there.
That is one of the issues that's going to come up here, because if we have more localised lockdowns, like we've seen in Aberdeen this week, businesses being told by the government they have to close, but the government support for these businesses has been coming from the UK Treasury up to now. There's a conflict that this is the same issue in the north of England whenever that happened last week, but devolution makes it a more complicated situation, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, that was his answer. He simply said, you know, local business support is a devolved matter, and I'm sure that the Scottish government will be looking at this. So, I mean, I suppose it'll be interesting to see how the Scottish government responds to that. But yeah, there is just simply, I suppose, you know, it's, from his point of view, presumably you can't keep handing out money in forever.
Yes. Where was he in Scotland today?
So, first of all, he was in Glasgow, and from there he's heading to the Isle of Bute, which I think is going to be seen as an opportunity to emphasise the help that the UK government has given the hospitality and the tourist sector during the pandemic.
Okay, that's interesting. Because, I mean, he is, as you said at the start, he's got actually, especially for a Conservative minister in Scotland, he's got pretty impressive approval ratings here. He's being tipped as a future prime minister, despite being pretty early in his career, really. And I heard him on the wireless this morning, and he does speak human, doesn't he? How did he come across in this Zoom call? Was he impressive, would you say?
Yeah, in these situations, it's not quite the same as meeting in the flesh, as you know. But yeah, no, he's obviously a very articulate guy. And I think he was very impressive, wasn't he, during the early stages of the pandemic, when he was doing a lot of briefings then as well. But yeah, always difficult to tell on a Zoom call, but no, obviously, as you say, he sort of speaks human, and seemed, you know, a sort of likable and genuine sort of chap.
He, as certainly his period of chancellor, no matter what else he does in the future, will be closely identified with this furlough scheme because it was such an unprecedented state intervention, particularly from a Tory chancellor. But as you say, the cost of it is extraordinary, as you would imagine, and it will have to come to an end. So I wonder if he comes back in 3 months' time and the furlough scheme has been stopped and the redundancies which we're reporting every day in our news brands just now are racking up, that could change quite quickly his popularity, couldn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's so important how the next few months are handled, looking into the future. You know, whether we just sort of drop off a cliff edge, which would just be, you know, disastrous. You know, how what sort of schemes they can, you know, how more jobs, more opportunities can be created once this furlough scheme ends. I mean, that really is going to be a massive challenge for him, and if he doesn't handle it particularly well, then yeah, that will have an enormous impact on his popularity and, of course, on jobs more importantly.
Derek, I'll bring you in at this stage because Aberdeen is kind of at the centre of that issue at the minute about how we support businesses that are being affected by the pandemic in an environment where the picture's changing all the time, that it looks like we're going to be having localised lockdowns and the economic sustainability of some businesses in the months ahead looks pretty shaky. You've been on the Scottish Government briefings this week, where Nicola Sturgeon first of all announced that and then dealt with the fallout. What's your feeling on how that's going to play out?
Yeah, so this is Scotland's first localised lockdown, as you mentioned. So in Aberdeen, there's a list of almost 30 establishments being linked to this outbreak, including pubs and restaurants in the city, a hotel in Aberdeenshire, and a number of golf courses. We've also seen, just breaking recently, that two Aberdeen Football Club players have tested positive and six more are isolating. So this is a pretty major outbreak across that patch. And you'd imagine it's going to have a pretty big impact because a lot of these businesses, a lot of these restaurants and hotels and so on, they've been closed for months and they've had to deal with that lockdown. A lot of these businesses will have bought in, you know, beer, drinks, food to cater for these people starting to come back through. And all over again, they've had to shut down. So it's going to have a pretty major impact. And there's been business leaders and businesses already calling for support. What's interesting is that on Tuesday and Wednesday, when this was announced, the picture shifted really, really quickly. So there was a meeting on Tuesday afternoon of the local team to discuss this, and that would involve, you know, council officials, NHS Grampian and so on. And they decided at that stage that it wasn't necessary to impose further restrictions because they felt that the situation was under control, the type of transmission that was there. It wasn't necessary for them to go ahead and impose certainly anything like on the scale we've seen announced on Wednesday. But by the time the national group convened at around 5 p.m. on Tuesday, that meeting was chaired by Nicola Sturgeon, there is already emerging evidence of a possible further increase in cases. So Nicola Sturgeon asked for more information and possible options before getting the group back together again on Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. We now know that as that group came back together on Wednesday morning at 9 a.m, around 20 further cases had been confirmed. So it was decided at that stage they had to get these new measures in place to get a handle of the situation before it got any worse. So really, just over the case of a few hours, the situation shifted from the local team thinking they had everything under control to a position where officials clearly thought it was necessary to introduce travel restrictions, shut down hospitality. So I think the point that Nicola Sturgeon has tried to make is that really this should be a warning right across Scotland how quickly this situation can change. So if it's difficult for businesses in Aberdeen, it will be difficult for businesses right across Scotland, and that's something we could see really at very short notice coming in.
Yeah, I think I'm listening to you describing the events of just 24 hours really there, what they really display or give an example for is that the scale of the impact that a small localised outbreak can do. We've seen businesses closed, bars and restaurants have had to shut. People are being told they can't leave their house. But even the football team has been affected, because I mean, I think they've had two positive cases now. They're not going to have eight players for the game against St Johnstone and other fixtures in the next 2 weeks as they self isolate. So it really is a situation that can develop so quickly, can have such a dramatic impact on so many different areas of the community around it. And then when you're thinking about that from the political or the policy making perspective, I started the conversation with the Chancellor. So the furlough scheme, big broad spectrum policy intervention. Let's pay people not to work if they can't work. But that can't go on. So he's saying we need to have local business support directed by the Scottish government. And it does seem that that is something where there's going to have to be quite nuanced and quickly developed and implemented support for this type of thing. But it's a very difficult thing to do. What is Nicola Sturgeon saying about how these businesses will be supported?
Well, the Scottish government, even weeks and weeks and weeks ago, have always made the case that there should be the furlough scheme or some kind of support should be in place for businesses around the country in different patches where and when it's needed. So this idea of the furlough scheme coming to an end, they've been quite strongly supporting having it in place longer. So for example, if Scotland needs to remain in stages of lockdown longer than the rest of the UK, Nicola Sturgeon has been keen that support should remain in place. And I know that's something that Kate Forbes has argued the case for, and the Scottish government have argued the case quite strongly. The Scottish government have been trying to work with the rest of the administrations around the UK to try and come out with this kind of agreement over the way they're going to handle the pandemic going forward. This idea of trying to work together to get it as low as possible, so you're not going to have these kind of low rumbling figures where that's going to come in. But so far, that's just not happened. I think. Nicola Sturgeon has tried to give the impression that there's going to be support available where they can, but I think businesses are looking for more information on what it's going to look like. Certainly that was the response when this all came out. You saw a lot of businesses having to, well, certainly these you know, the 30 businesses involved, they're shut. All hospitality businesses are going to, you know, pubs and restaurants and so on are shut for a period of a week. But when they come back as well, certainly the ones that have been listed here and the ones who have had to shut a very short notice are going to be in a very difficult position. So I think they'll be looking for more answers on that.
Okay, Tom, I'll bring you back at this stage because, I mean, we touched on this briefly earlier, but it seems to me that if we want this to work, the best way that we can kind of insulate businesses and individuals from the pain that this pandemic is causing economically is going to require the two governments to be working together very well, because as we've described there, we have a situation where Nicola Sturgeon has taken the decision to do the localized lockdown, but expecting the UK government to be the ones who decide what the support mechanism could be in some cases. From Chancellor Sunak's comments this morning, did you get the impression that there is any closer working between the governments? Because we know that the relations have been pretty strained in the last couple of months.
Yeah, relations have been strained. I mean, on the face of it, he did say that the four nations were working closely together, but in a way, that's kind of what you'd expect him to say. And you know, at the moment, one gets the impression that UK government ministers are certainly not in the business of trying to wind up any conflict between the two governments, because they've seen that's something that Nicola Sturgeon when there does seem to be any sort of dispute that it doesn't seem to support for the SNP, it doesn't do anything to stop the SNP support rising. So one has definitely detected a tone. We saw it when Michael Gove was up. We saw it when Boris Johnson was up, that they are trying to make far more conciliatory noises after after quite after the heat that has been between the two governments during the pandemic.
So, at being a UK minister in Scotland, how long did it take for a second independence referendum question to be raised in the Zoom briefing this morning?
I didn't have the stopwatch.
Was it the first question or the second question?
Do you know what? I think it might have been the third question. Anyway, not very long, as you correctly predicted. It was, it raised its head, fairly early on.
Let me predict what was said then. So he was asked about a second independence referendum, and he said that the people of Scotland had decided in 2014, and this was not the time to re-examine the question. Does that sum it up?
That's a fair paraphrase, I would say. Now is not the time, a phrase that was uttered from Theresa May's lips. So there was some form of that, I think. And there was, now is not the time to have a divisive constitutional battle when our focus should be on recovering from the pandemic.
Was there anything more than that, or was it glossed over pretty quickly?
Well, he didn't dwell because it was a limited call, but there was a bit more in that he was also tackled on, the SNP's rising support in the polls, and in particular the support for independence, which has been put in one panel based poll at 54%, and the sort of idea that we've had four UK government ministers coming up here in recent days, all sort of arguing that the broad shoulders of the United Kingdom has enabled Scotland to withstand this pandemic better than it would have had we been independent. Mm-hmm. But this doesn't seem to be making any, this doesn't seem to be stopping the surge in independence support. So he was asked, what can you do about that? And his answer was, again, I paraphrase, his answer was something, was that he hoped that in the fullness of time that people would see and acknowledge, the financial support that Scotland has received as part of the UK.
The Tories are definitely worried about Scotland, aren't they? They're worried about this polling. They're worried about Nicola Sturgeon's rocketing popularity, and you can see that not only from the ministerial visits that we're getting so regularly just now, but also this absolutely breakneck pace of which they changed leader this week. I mean, it was pretty astonishing that, I think it was only this time last week that Jackson Carlow was shocking us all by saying he wasn't going to be leader anymore, and Douglas Ross has already been installed without a challenger. What's been the mood music from the Tories on that, Tom?
Yeah, so a frantic few days for sure. There's certainly a hope within the Tories that this change will do something to revive their fortunes. Whether it does remains to be seen, obviously. But I think the return of Ruth Davidson, for instance, has been welcomed, and she is sort of to be by Ross's side. And Douglas Ross, as MP for Murray, doesn't have a seat in the Scottish Parliament, so he needs someone to do First Minister's questions. So Ruth Davidson will be reprising her role there, taking on Nicola Sturgeon in the way that she used to when she was Scottish Tory leader. So I think her return to frontline politics has sort of been welcomed. Within the Tories themselves, I mean, to an extent, Douglas Ross is slightly an unknown quantity. Although people say that he was impressive as a Scotland Office Minister, and he's been very good at getting under the SNP's skin in the House of Commons. One of the things one hears about Douglas Ross is that he is his own man. He is decisive and he knows what he wants. I had a quick chat with Ruth Davidson earlier this week to discuss how this new arrangement was going to work, and one of the things she said in slightly more graphic terms than this, which she said that she said that she told Douglas Ross that working with him was going to be an absolute pain in the backside. She used another word than backside. She said it would be an absolute pain in the backside, but she said, I meant that in a good way, in that, he'll be a demanding person to work with. I think there's amongst the Tories, there is certainly, well, there has to be a feeling of hope that that things can improve.
There is a sense that he's more of the Ruth Davidson school, in that he's younger than Jackson Carlo, obviously, but he does seem to have a hinterland. We know about his football refereeing, which he's a very high level football referee doing Champions League matches as well as significant Scottish football games. With Jackson Carlo felt kind of old school Tory, whereas Douglas Ross does have that feeling that Ruth Davidson brought, that maybe he could reach out to a wider part of the electorate. Is that fair, that analysis, do you think?
Yes, I think it's certainly the big hope, isn't it? Because, as you say, you know, Jackson Carlo was sort of quite often condemned as golf club man or something like that. I don't even know if he plays golf, but sort of the you know,
he looks as if he does.
But it's sort of, yeah, a typical Tory who may be highly thought of in the relatively narrow world of being a member of the Scottish Tory Party. But yeah, what they've got to do is somehow get back to the sort of that feel good thing under Ruth Davidson, when they had a leader that could relate to people beyond the confines of the Scottish Tory Party.
Yeah. Well, there's a Scottish Parliament election in less than 9 months, and at the minute, the SNP's lead looks unassailable, and Nicola Sturgeon looks unassailable. Although I have to say, I think she has had the most difficult week this week that I can remember. Although I suppose when you're leading a country's response to a global pandemic, every week is pretty difficult. But the exam results this week certainly have caused a lot of controversy and have angered a lot of people. So I'm delighted to be joined for the first time by Cheryl Peebles, who runs our schools team and has been covering this story for us this week. Cheryl, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you. So can you maybe just give us a bit of the background then?
Yes. As we all know, the exams were cancelled due to the coronavirus restrictions. They should have been sat in May. Instead, teachers were asked to submit their estimates of pupils' grades to the Scottish Qualifications Authority. These were based on the pupils' performance over the last year and their prelim results. The SQA then began a process of moderating these results. On Tuesday morning, about 138 young people around Scotland started receiving their results about 8 o'clock through text, email, and also the traditional A4 envelope. It pretty quickly became clear that there was a big problem. There was a lot of people had taken to social media right from the beginning of the day, complaining, telling stories of expecting grade A's, for example, and getting C's, even D's in some cases. The Scottish Qualifications Authority was being asked for answers, obviously. Even before the grades were issued, there were claims that there could be a tendency for schools in deprived areas to get worse results because of the moderation process used, and the fact that one of the factors involved in that was historical attainment of schools. And of course, schools in deprived areas tend to have lower attainment rates.
Has there been transparency about that process? Because it seems to me that it's been a little bit foggy exactly how they've came to the conclusions they've came to.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. People are still asking for clarity. I think there's a lot of information has been published about how the moderation process was conducted, but I find it I think it's still unclear. I think people still want to know more about how exactly their grades were decided upon. I spoke to one young pupil just the day before the exam results came out, and he was growing increasingly worried, as were his peers. They were obviously reading the coverage of the moderation process and the fact that the Green Party, I think, had raised in Parliament their concerns that schools in deprived areas might be badly affected. So people were starting to get really worried, and these worries have borne out.
So what happens now? There's an appeal process.
Yeah. The appeals deadline for those who are waiting for confirmation of university places is August the 14th. So there's not a great deal of time. And obviously schools are working hard to start getting the ball rolling on this. I know Nicola Sturgeon has encouraged anybody who has concerns about their grades to use this free appeals service which will be it'll be an extremely busy service this year, I believe.
Yeah, the other thing that strikes me about it is that it's going to be a very complicated appeals process. It's going to be time consuming, and my understanding is, you'll maybe know better than me about this, Cheryl, is that teachers are going to be asked to do it, but of course they're also preparing for the schools to go back under very trying circumstances next week. So it sounds like there's going to be a lot of pressure on teachers over the next few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. It will be teachers that's involved in this appeals process. There's going to be so many more appeals than normal. And these same teachers are the ones that are having to prepare for school under a new normal. I mean, they're supposed to be starting back work on Monday. Pupils are starting to arrive back in schools Wednesday, Tuesday in some cases. There's a lot of work to be done. They're very, very hard pressed, yes. There are concerns. Will all the appeals be conducted in time to confirm university places?
It's a very messy situation, and it strikes me that from a political perspective or from a politician's perspective, the possibility of infuriating teachers, pupils, and parents is a bit of a nightmare scenario. What has Nicola Sturgeon and the Scottish Government said about it? Because I know this is the SQA is the authority that's involved in this, but ultimately it's the government that people will turn their fire on when things go wrong. So what has she said about the situation? Has she been confident that the process has been correct?
The government has said that the process has been fair. The grades are fair. That they had to go through this moderation process to ensure that the results, to ensure the figures were credible. Had the grades been issued as teachers predicted, because the pass rate has gone up considerably, which is good news. Yeah. But had teachers' estimates all just been accepted as they were, it would have been even higher. So they have said that this moderation was needed to produce credible figures. The pass rate, for example, for hires is 78.9% compared to last year when it was 74.8%. So it's quite a big rise. But although you have to have credible figures, on the other hand, you have real people, real young people whose futures depend on these results, who have university college places dependent on getting the grades that they needed.
I suppose that's kind of the crux of the issue, isn't it? That the government and the SQA have to look at it in the round. But if you're a pupil getting your results, it's only the individual that you're concerned about. And if you feel that you've been hard done by, then you're going to be angry. I'll maybe bring you in at this point, Derek. You were on the Zoom call quite a lot about that with the First Minister. Did you get a sense that the Scottish Government are concerned about the implications of this as far as their own standing is concerned? I know John Swinney, the Education Secretary, has been under pressure on it.
Yeah, so as you touched on, the Scottish Government has come under fire from pupils, teachers, parents, education experts and opposition parties. I don't know if anything has been more damaging to Nicola Sturgeon's reputation in her time as First Minister than this. There's been plenty of other criticism, of course, even recently, but I'm not sure anything else has cut through in the way that this has. Nicola Sturgeon often tries to frame herself as a champion of fairness and education, and she's spoken about her own education in the past and free education, free university tuition and how that benefited her. She's effectively tried to lessen the impact of all this by saying, hey, don't worry, this is, if the first step, the SQA grading portion of this, gave you an incorrect result, if you feel there's been an incorrect result, you can always go through the appeals process and pupils and their teachers can submit evidence. But concerns have also been raised, and I know Cheryl touched on this, about teachers being overwhelmed with the appeal process when children return to classes because the methodology was only released as the exam results came through. So I think, and maybe I'll be proved wrong in this, but I think this could be a pretty significant problem for the Scottish Government and the SNP, and I think the way they've responded to it kind of indicates that. There's a lot of anger about this. Already there's been suggestions that John Swinney, the Education Secretary, Deputy First Minister, should go if this can't be sorted out, if they can't come up with an appeals process. First of all, which can handle the volume of requests that are expected to come through, but also if that appeals process isn't able to do it in a way that's seen as being fair and not disadvantaging disadvantaged pupils, that he should go. But there's also a march in Glasgow where pupils are going to be protesting outside Scottish Parliament as well, and that's not a great look. I know that, I mean, certainly the school that I went to, I had kind of historically quite low attainment. And a lot of my classmates went on to become, you know, dentists or academics or science, whatever.
Or journalists.
Or journalists in some cases, yeah. The low-performing ones went on to become journalists. So I think the thought of this kind of thing, maybe stopping young people from achieving those dreams or that other young people might not be able to do the same, is one that's going to elicit quite an emotional response. So, I mean, hopefully things can, something can be worked out. But I think the pressure on this, the sustained pressure on this, is possibly something that we've not really seen before on this government.
So that's what the politicians are making of it, Cheryl. What are the teachers saying? Because I guess they're the ones who have had their estimated marks changed quite dramatically in many cases.
Yeah, we are hearing from teachers who are very, very disappointed with the process. They feel that their professionalism has been undermined. They've put a lot of work into assessing each individual pupil, and they know each individual pupil so well. They've submitted these grades. These are the grades they believe these particular pupils should get, and then someone has just gone and changed them. So there is a lot of anger among the teaching profession as well.
Well, and on that note, they'd now have to get the schools back and running next week during a global pandemic of a contagious virus, which is not something that I would particularly like to be in charge of. So I think we can all thank the teachers for their efforts and wish them well as the schools go back next week. On that note, we will also be back next week at the Stooshy, but we're coming to an end for this week, I think. So I'd like to thank Derek, Cheryl and Tom for joining us today, you for listening, and for the Stooshy, I've been David Clay. Cheers.
The Stooshy is the politics podcast from DC Thompson Media, bringing together political journalists and commentators from all over the country so that you are better briefed. Teams at The Courier, The Press and Journal, The Evening Telegraph and The Evening Express work hard every day, online and in print, to bring you careful reporting and analysis to help you understand the implications of what happens in Holyrood, Westminster and beyond. Subscribe to The Stooshy today, recommend us to friends and family, rate and review it if you have a moment, and let us know what you think of what we cover and how we cover it on Twitter and Facebook. We're Stooshy Scott on both. Be better briefed with The Stooshy from DC Thompson Media.